try again.
Alright, it's a Thursday night here on The Late Show with Kayak Fishing Radio Network. I'm your host, Rob DeVore, otherwise known as the Bad Batcast, and you can catch me here live every Thursday night at 11, but don't worry if you can't stay up or you're too much of a wimp to stay up or whatever, you can always catch the podcast. Or you can download it right there on iTunes. So, Kayak Fishing Radio. You can catch all of the shows there, too, by the way. So, anyway, what's going on this week? Let me take a look here. Got my list here. Oh, man. We got to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about etiquette. Kayak fishing and, things of that nature. We got Redfish Chuck from the always illustrious and always popular and always fish, full of fish, Mosquito Lagoon. How you doing, Chuck?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm here, man. It's great. It's the late show, man. It's always great to be here, man. I'm, enjoying a frosty Newcastle and one of my favorite beers. How you doing, man? You been fishing?
I haven't been fishing actually. We've been really, really busy at the shop, so
yeah.
I haven't really been able to take any time away from there to go do any fishing of my own, but I have a fishing extravaganza planned for next week, so.
Awesome. I'm excited. Hey, you know, on the phone with me right now is Ranger Rick from the always popular Port Canaveral there. And say, Rick, is the launch? We're gonna see a launch up there next week, or what? Space shuttle's getting ready to go up. What do you think our chances are of seeing a launch next week? Awesome. Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, I just got to be dorky sometimes. But anyway, Chuck, I'm excited, man. Apparently, Greg was over there, and Greg, the hammerhead, went fishing with D on Monday. So I guess they were out in the no motor zone over there, and caught a couple of redfish, couple of trout. He had a picture of the smallest dink trout I've ever seen. I mean, that was even smaller than the ones I catch. So, but anyway, yeah, I think that's awesome. So, what's the plan for the lagoon?
Seek and destroy.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. So we're gonna be chasing. We're gonna be chasing the big red Octobers.
Well, we're going to be chasing something. I'm going to try and get us on some fish. I don't know, man. I haven't been up there, so it's going to be interesting. I'm going to try and get up there at some point in the middle of the week and kind of scout it out a little bit. But
that's cool. Well, you know, you're good
at it,
man. I
think we'll do just fine.
You're good at it. That's what you do. You know, if anybody knows the lagoon, it's you. So, I think it'll be cool. I'm excited about it, man. And I was trying to get Greg to call in with like a fishing report, you know, give us a little bit of a story, you know, or something. But he's there in the chat room. Let's see if we can get him on there at some point. But so tell me something, you know. So you're out there, Chuck, and you're out there fishing, and all of a sudden, you know, everything's nice and quiet, and all of a sudden they show up. You know who they are, Chuck?
Oh, I know who they are.
That's the, you know, you're fishing and you get a group of somebody in a boat or something comes up, runs right up either over your spot or real close to it, you know, something like that. What do you do to avoid that sort of thing, man? If you were teaching a kayak fishing class and you were teaching etiquette to other kayak fishers and boaters, what would be the first rule that you would that you'd talk about, man?
The first rule is if you see somebody fishing on a flat, you should at least give them several hundred yards in every direction, just to be courteous. If they were there first, then just go around them, and as long as you skirt around somebody, then normally they don't really care if you go by them or not, you know. And like a good general rule of thumb is if you can read the manufacturer's label on their kayak or on their boat, then you're way too close.
Yeah,
so,
I usually try
you know.
To. I usually have me personally, and you know, sometimes it's you can't always adhere to a couple of hundred yards, but at least me personally, you know, sometimes people fishing from shores or docks or something like that, and but I try to have at least a 100-foot rule, and I try to give them a wide berth, you know, try to go around them as far out of the way as I can. So I'm a, you know, I mean, it's just courtesy, you know, and it's common sense and courtesy, and you try to, give somebody, you know, you don't want to run up on their spot. You know, you don't, if they're drifting a certain way, I try to stay out of their drift. You know, sometimes with people on shore, I remember, fishing one night at night, and there was a guy fishing on a dock, and I mean, I was fishing the docks, you know, just kind of drifting through, trying to find fish, and I couldn't find any, you know. I mean, I couldn't find fish. Yeah, right. That's everybody knows that. But I didn't even see. I ran right into his lines, and I didn't even see him. You know, it was dark, and you know, stuff like that. But you know, if it was in the daytime, I would have at least seen the guy. I would have possibly seen his line or something like that. So make sure you give people a wide berth out there, man. And you know, if they're catching fish, good for them. Don't try to horn in on their hole or anything like that. So you always want to remember good kayak fishing etiquette. You know, and oh, look at this, man. Okay, got I bet you anything this is Greg. Greg, you're gonna give me a report for Mosquito Lagoon, right? All right, Greg, you went out with D from Real Kayak Fishing. Can you give me a report there on what was it like fishing Mosquito Lagoon with D. Kaminsky?
Well, it was pretty good. I had a great time with her out on the water on Monday, and it was thanks to NASA, I guess the day wasn't as good as she was hoping, but it was still pretty damn good as far as I was concerned. So we caught
some
redfish. Doubled the size of my biggest redfish, so I was stoked, and caught a nice 21-inch trout as well, and hooked up on another one that was bigger, and lost it of my own accord, so can't really complain much there.
Yeah, I tell you, Dee's really serious, isn't she, when you go out there? I mean, there's no screwing around, man. She's out there to fish and find fish and put you on fish, and that's what she does, man. There isn't any screwing around with that, man. So tell me, so you did you drive down from New Hampshire?
No, I flew down, and the plan was I was going to be getting into Orlando at like 9 o'clock at night, drive out to the coast, get a hotel, get up and go fishing early in the morning. But my plane got delayed, and
oh man,
didn't get into Orlando till like 2 a.m.
Oh no!
And then all the rental car booths were closed. So by the time I finally got a rental car, it ended up getting a couple hours of sleep in the car at the launch before he got there.
Oh, wow. Now, when you woke up, were you covered with mosquitoes?
No. I was smart. I put my deed on at Denny's on the way in. So, stopped at Denny's for a midnight breakfast.
Wow.
On the way, applied the deed, came prepared. Then went out, fished all day with B, had a great time. Had a little bit of wind, wasn't too bad. And by the time I got back to my hotel for these classes in Orlando at like 7, I was just dead.
Yeah.
Dead for the last days. So.
Well, did you have to paddle very far?
We paddled a couple miles. Wasn't too far.
That's cool.
We would have gone farther if it wasn't for NASA, but they shut down the flats that she wanted to fish. And,
that's a bummer, man.
We're sitting there, we're catching trout, we're taking our time going over to where she saw and caught a whole bunch of redfish the day before. And here comes this airboat, just hugging the shore, just running over every flat in sight.
They were probably doing it on purpose.
if he wasn't, it sure looked like it.
Wow. Chuck, is that a common occurrence over there?
Yeah, they use airboats to get around out there because they're kind of stealthy at first. But they usually hug the shoreline for safety reasons. I mean, you don't want to get an airboat out on open water if there's any kind of chop on the surface at all.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they those guys typically aren't a bunch of jerks. I mean, they're just, you know, it sucks.
Oh, yeah, they got a job to do, absolutely.
Oh, yeah,
so,
I wouldn't want that job.
So, Ranger Rick, do you guys commonly run you know, people in kayaks off of the fish there? You know, when they're there, right on top of the tailing redfish. So, sorry. Oh man, sorry. Chip's gonna, he just has way too many sound bites on here for me. So anyway, well, dude, Greg, that's awesome, man. I got to congratulate you on that dink trout, man. That was like that. I think that would have won the smallest fish contest, on Yak Angler.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, is I felt the thing hit the bait. It wasn't like I was reeling it in and, oh, look what I found. I felt the thing hit. I set the hook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Those things will, you know, they're amazing. I remember, you know, bass fishing, and you'd get a, you know, be fishing with a 7-inch plastic worm, and those things, I mean, the worm is, like, longer than the fish is, and it's, you know, it's just sitting there. They just got all that attitude, man. So I think that's you know, those things are something, man. You know, they just, and a dink trout will try to eat something that's as big as it, man. So,
yeah.
Those things definitely, their eyes are bigger than their mouth.
Yeah.
So that's awesome, man. I'm excited about next weekend. And, you know, once again, if you're, so inclined, you know, some people from, the yakangler.com and, Kayak Fishing Radio Network. We're all getting together and heading over to Mosquito Lagoon to fish with Chuck and fish with Dee and whoever else wants to come out there for a day and have fun. So make some arrangements and get a hold of us either on Yak Angler or my website or somebody. Abadbackcast.com, by the way. So you got class tomorrow, Greg?
Yeah, I got one more day of classes before I head up north, and unfortunately I couldn't arrange it to stay down here this weekend and do some fishing as well. So
yeah, that's
going
a drag,
back
man.
North where the water's still solid.
Yeah, I'm going tomorrow. Either tomorrow night and possibly Saturday as well, and Saturday night. I got a whole lot of fishing that's built up in me that, I haven't been able to quite get out of my system enough. Hopefully we'll see what the docks are like, the nighttime dock lights, and I'm excited about it, man. Anytime I can get out at night fishing dock lights, I'm excited. So it'll be my first trip of the year at night on the dock lights. Water temperature 72, and hopefully there's big fish lurking, because there's about 1,000,001 dock lights out there in this area that we fish. So it's going to be awesome. I'm excited about it. So, all right, let's talk about this. I've been doing some research with on sunglasses, fishing sunglasses, and it's definitely something that you need when you're out kayak fishing. Depending on where you're at, your color will depend on, when you're fishing, where you're fishing, what type of water quality you're looking at and everything. But currently I fish with, I wear Bimini Bays, I like them. They're fine. The brown lenses, they do the job for me. I have another pair of dark, super dark, smoke-colored lenses. And those, for the flying fisherman ones, and those are great in the middle of the day. But I generally prefer brown, because in our type of water over here, it's easier to see, what kind of where you're at and what you can see fish easier with the brown, in my opinion. So Chuck, what kind of sunglasses do you wear there, man?
Costa del Mars.
Yeah, what color? Your lens.
Yeah, I wear, I've got a couple pair. I have a pair of Blue Mirror gray lenses for offshore. I've got a pair of just straight amber lenses, non-mirrored, for inshore. And I have a pair of silver mirror with a copper lens for inshore as well. And, I sell a lot of coasters out of the shop. And that's pretty much the deal. If you're going to fish inshore, something with either an amber or copper lens or a brown lens, and if you're going to fish offshore out in the ocean, the blue water, then something with a gray lens or, it seems to be the winning combination.
Well, I typically, now, is there, do you wear like brown or, copper or amber, for certain conditions, like if it's overcast, you wear one color as opposed to another?
No, just whichever pair I feel like putting on that particular day.
Okay, whatever looks cooler with whatever color shirt you're wearing or something like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. I got to color coordinate, man. I got to look good for the fish, so,
It's got to match your kayak, too, so.
That's right, absolutely.
If I'm fishing in the middle of the day, a lot of times, and it's really sunny out, I'll use the gray with the smoke colored ones, because they're dark, they're way darker, and I feel that they protect my eyes a little bit more, and I can still see, pretty well, but yeah, I know what you mean. Now, what is it with the offshore that makes the smoke so preferable, as far as the lens color?
You just nailed it. It brightens everything up. So, picking out weed line or picking out scattered weeds offshore, yellow sargasm weed, is real easy with the brighter lens. Finding or seeing dolphin underneath the surface is a lot easier. Just mainly just cutting the glare down on that big ocean, man. For whatever reason, that smoke or that silver lens or gray lens is just the way to go for sure.
Awesome. Now, one thing that I found is that you can either, when it comes to, price wise, I'm always the, I'm the, I'm on a budget, man. So I'm looking at stuff, you know, as far as you know, how much things cost a lot of times. And I found, you know, for years and years, you can either, you know, you're stuck with two circumstances. Either you're getting $15 sunglasses off the rack, or you got to pay, you know, $150 for a decent pair of shades. And now I have found a new company called Guidelines. If you've ever heard of them, they're, if you just Google Guidelines sunglasses, you'll find their website. But those are good because they have a middle of the road. You know, you can they have, you know, $15 sunglasses and $200 sunglasses, but they also have middle of the road stuff. You know, you know, $25 or $30 or, you know, $50, $80, you know, whatever you want to spend. And, you know, it's a little bit better than maybe getting something off the rack. Or, you know, I'll tell you a story. I did, back in the day, I did have a pair of really expensive sunglasses for fishing. And it was, like, getting dark, and I had my sunglasses on my head. And this is before I had a croaky, and I bent down to get a fish over the side of the boat, and my sunglasses fell off and just sank like a stone. So that was my first and only experience with good quality sunglasses that weren't off the, you know, generally off the rack or something like that. So you know, now, you know, of course I got the whatever you call it, the sunglasses keeper that keeps it from falling off. But wish I would have had that back then, you know. So, so Greg, what kind of sunglasses are you fishing with these days?
Right now I'm just using a pair of prescription Ray-Bans that I have. They got gray lenses. They work pretty well. They're not great. Like you, my last pair of expensive fishing glasses were donated to the fish.
I bet you they look good in them, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, are they polarized and everything?
Oh, yeah, they're polarized, scratch-resistant. Good pair of prescription sunglasses I have, and somehow I've managed not to drop them. But this year I'm looking at spring, hopefully getting a new pair that I hope to get prescription lenses in as well. Getting older, can't see as well as I used to.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I understand that totally. Now, as far as style goes, you know, I like the wraparounds, you know, like the old, I don't know, I'm going to call them Oakley style, you know, with the blades that kind of stick down and kind of wrap around the side a little bit. God, what do you call those? What style is that? Blades, I guess? I don't know. I don't know exactly what you would call that style, but I actually wear them over top of my glasses. I don't have the Bill Dance, you know, cataract surgery, you know, polarized glasses or anything like that. But, you know, I used to, though, back in the day. I've had those before, trust me. But I definitely... I like the ones, I like a lot of coverage, man, because I just, when I put on, I like to be able to put on glasses and I feel like I'm sticking my head inside of a dark room or something, you know. That's how I like my sunglasses. Not gigantic. I don't want, like, big Hollywood hater blockers or anything like that. But definitely want some coverage, man. You like those too, Chuck, with a lot of coverage?
Yeah, I have to. Unfortunately, I was blessed with a very large head, so you know, I have to get a pair of shades that wrap around or at least don't make my face look too fat. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah,
there's a couple of the frame styles from Costa Del Mar, like the black fins and the hammerheads, that work real well for that. They have kind of bigger ear pieces to kind of block out some of the light on the sides as well. Big box type frames. Big box type lenses that block out a lot of light too. Yeah, I'm with you though. I don't like to have any light coming in if possible. So.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I actually had some polarized lenses that I put over, you know, they were like not exactly clip-ons, but they were like that. They were made for my glasses, and they were polarized, and they were, you know, amber, and they were, you know, really nice and everything. But, you know, I wear smaller glasses, so they would, you know, they wouldn't block out any light except what was in front of you, you know. And, I mean, you'd be getting, like, sun reflection off of your face, like, you know, bouncing off the lens back into your eye and stuff, and it was just really, really distracting, and I hated it, man. It was like wearing little John Lennon sunglasses or something like that. So I absolutely hated it. And well, there's Rob Choi checking in. He's got Costa del Mars and Revo and Maui Jims. Wow, man, you got it. You got the whole triumphant there. You just got to, now you got to get some Oakleys. No, I'm kidding. I was actually looking at some of their stuff. They have some pretty cool sport glasses, but, I mean, they almost looked like ski goggles or something, you know? So I wasn't really, you know, maybe it might be cool if you were, you know, in a band or something.
Yeah, I just came across this new brand the other day. We're looking at them for our company for safety goggles, but they also have a line of fishing glasses. It's called Willie X.
Okay, I've heard of that somewhere.
Yeah, they. I'm just looking at their site now. It's WillieX.com, and they sponsor Skeet Reese and a couple. Other big bass guys, but they do tactical glasses for the military, safety glasses. They make them in, you can get them in prescription lenses, you know, all wraparound type styles and stuff like that. They look
yeah.
pretty nice.
Yeah,
they're
I mean,
definitely not cheap, though.
Oh, no, a lot of them aren't. That was what I liked about the, what do you call it, the guidelines, was that they had, you know, different styles, you know, basically. It wasn't just, you know, one kind, you know, some sunglasses, like, for instance, the Bimini Bays that I use, those things are, you know, they're like one style, you know, you just, you know, they have different color frames, different color lenses, you know. You know, I was impressed with the guidelines because they had, you know, so many different kinds of styles and looks to them and you know, lens sizes and you could get all sorts of different kinds of lens. You could get glass, you could get prescription, you could get, you know, polybicarbonate, you could get, you know, or just regular old plastic, you know. And the frames, they had metal frames, they had plastic, they had nylon, I mean, you name it. You know, and I thought it was kind of cool. You could basically go on there and, you know, pick a frame and pick a, you know, lens type and size and, you know, material and everything. And you could basically have a custom set of shades right there. I thought that was pretty neat. So check them out. Google guidelines and have a look at them. So anyway, so Chuck, come on, tell me something. What kind of new gear you got? You've been working on or using or selling? You know, tell me a story here.
Dude, right now it's been wide open at the shop, mainly for our offshore business because the Cobia run has just been absolutely epic. So I mean, we're just selling big spinner reels, heavy duty spinner rods. I think we've sold through probably close to 1,000 Cobia jigs already. It's just, it's nuts, man. I haven't really gotten a whole lot of new stuff as far as the inshore side of things goes. I did, however, talk to a rep the other day who brought me in a sample of some plastics to try from a company called Contender. I don't know much about them, but the plastic was kind of interesting. I'm not a big twin curly tail fan. I think that's a pufferfish magnet. But you know, the guy was willing to give me a couple bags of it, so you know, I'm going to give it a shot and see what it's all about. But you know, just excited about trying to get a couple new fly rods here shortly. I was going to build them, but you know, I kind of passed on that idea. I just don't have time to really sit down and do that. So I picked up those other two Loomis fly reels recently. So
awesome.
Those things need homes. So But yeah, well, you know, I'm just kind of laying low, just you know, doing the kid thing right now, and it's just taking up a lot of my time and work as well. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I was gonna comment on. Oh yeah, the soft plastic thing. You know, I have a hard time finding, you know, just like regular old curly tail jigs to use. You know, it's like they don't sell them around here. When they do, they're like, you know, fresh, you know, panfish size. And, you know, sometimes those are good. Those are fine when you need to scale down and stuff. But I'm talking about, you know, just a regular 3-inch curly tailed grub, and I'm having like difficulty finding them around here. So I might have to, you know, find some online or something like that. But I did try out the other. Huh? Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I could tell you that the company Cody, it's like Cody Jigs.
Yeah.
They still make a curly tail and Gotcha, not to be confused with the other Gotcha, the hard baits. But there's a company Gotcha that also makes a soft plastic curly tail. In fact, they sell them in bags of like 50 for. I think like $3.99. They're so cheap.
Kind of wow, ridiculous. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'll have to check them out. I've heard the name before, man, so I've just never tried them. Now, I did try out the newer Rage Tail shrimp there, and you know, it's not a bad little soft plastic. You know, it's not necessarily my type of thing. They look pretty good. It kind of looks like a DOA shrimp, but on the back end they have like two little curly tails that'll spin, or you know, that'll move through the water, and you know, they're okay. But they came with some sort of stink Procure stuff or Striking scent, and I was kind of you know, that stuff was great. I mean, you could throw the plastic jigs in the Ziploc bag with the stink and kind of get them, you know, move them around in there, you know, work the stink in so that when you're ready for one, you just pull it out of your Ziploc bag and you're ready to go. Well, it was the thing that I did not like about them was it's made out of that super tough plastic that stretches. Like, you'd take the whole thing out and stretch it out 3 feet, you know. You ever
yeah.
try jigs like that? And I just
yeah,
did not
I'm
like
not into that.
That,
dude.
I did not like that, man. Rigging that thing up on a jig head was just like, could not get it to sit right. And it would like, you know, it would bend up the, you know, it would bend right up the, what do you call it, the J in the hook, you know. So I was definitely not impressed with that, man. But they, you know, they looked okay in the water, and it you know, I didn't catch any fish on it or anything like that, but, you know, that's the thing that I did not like about it was it was that hard, that super stretchy, indestructible plastic. So it definitely looked like it would have some staying power. You know, you could probably catch fish on that thing all day long and not have to worry about it getting ripped up or torn up or anything like that. But man, rigging that thing, I don't know, maybe somebody needs to show me a secret or something, but I was using a Slayer jig head with it and everything. So
I'm not a big fan of that super stretchy soft plastic. I don't know, I've caught fish on them, man, but I just don't see really the appeal to it, to be honest with you. You know how I roll, dude. I roll with the
12 fathoms
with the 4-inch paddle tails and let her eat.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I was you know, I like to check them out, and you know, it looked like a pretty cool concept. But I don't know, man. I don't know how you would rig that thing up on like a worm hook or something like that, because it was it just didn't seem like it would. I mean, it was hard enough just to run the thing up a jig head, you know. So I was talking to Daryl from Angler to Angler. And he was saying the same thing. He didn't really care for them. The Z-Man baits makes the same. It's made out of like the same material. And they were saying how, you know, it'd be great. You know, I mean, it holds up, and the fish don't tear them up. But you know, getting the thing rigged and everything is a chore. So, you know, come up with a secret, something a little bit in the middle there, you know, maybe so it doesn't get torn up by two fish, but then again, it's not so hard to rig. I don't know, maybe I'm just complaining. So, Greg, when you were out with Dee the other day, what were you using? Were you using bait, or were you using soft plastics, or what? I know that she's into the 12 fathoms.
Yeah, we're using some soft baits, paddle tails on jig heads. What we were catching a lot of fish on was just a simple, basic gold spoon.
Yeah.
And that was, everything was hitting that. The trout, redfish, ladyfish, pufferfish, pink trout. you name it, everything was just all over that.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of fish there, and I'm telling you, you can use any, if you're on fish, you can use anything to catch them, man.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, to me, I don't think that there's that much of a difference. you know, it's like, I mean, you can just throw like there's a drinking straw fly that you can make, you know, and you just basically throw a hook on a drinking straw and you throw it, you know, when you're fly fishing and you'll catch fish on it. But, yeah, no, that's pretty cool, man. You know, you can, I'm telling you, man, just a little paddle tail, just a regular natural colored paddle tail, I would definitely fish anywhere with something like that, man. Now, Chuck, you use those slurp things, right? Or is that a 12 fathom?
Yeah.
Is that made by 12 fathom?
No, it's not 12 fathom. That's Bass Assassin. And actually,
that's right.
It used to be called slurps, but they got sued over the name slurps.
Did they really?
Another soft plastic company was calling their bait slurpees, and they however in the world that worked out, but whatever. So they had to change the name to blurp. And in fact, most of the packaging that you see now is just a sticker over the word slurp. So, but no, yeah, the Bass and blurps. You know what, man? I'm very, very fortunate to where I get to try out a lot of stuff, obviously, through the shop. And, you know, I've probably fished, I don't know, everybody's stuff that's relevant in the industry, I've probably fished it at least a dozen times in all their different styles and colors and this, that, and the other. And I am probably the biggest critic when it comes to soft plastics because that's all I throw. I don't throw spoons. I don't throw topwater. I don't throw live bait, natural bait. I just don't do it. I'm a soft plastic dude, and that's just the way I like it. And those blurps, man, have probably outproduced everything else. I would say 15 to 20 fish to one. It's just I don't know if it's the scent, because they do have a scent in them. But I know for a fact that in a dirty water condition, those paddle tails rigged properly, whether on a jig head or on a weedless worm hook, like a 3-0 worm hook. Have a nasty vibration to them. Like they really wobble a whole lot. And you would think that you wouldn't want, you know, paddle tail bait to wobble that way. But I think that throws off enough vibration where those fish can pick up that motion on their lateral lines and really hone in on it and just, you know, obliterate it. So, yeah, you know, we all have our favorites, what we like to throw. And,
yeah, I have a hard time. I have a hard time getting off of, like, a DOA shrimp, you know. I mean, I just have a hard time going away from that. And I always have one of those. You know, I only usually carry two rods with me. And usually I have a DOA shrimp on that, man. So I know exactly what you mean. It's like my crutch or something, you know. It's my confidence bait, you know.
Yeah, that's all it is. And that's 90% of what we do and what we sell out of the store is what you're confident with. And most of it has absolutely nothing to do with catching fish because, honestly, all the stuff that's out there catches fish. It's just a matter of what you prefer over the next guy. But and with that being said, not to say that I'm just strictly Bass Assassin, but like the DOA Cal paddle tails, same thing. You know,
yeah.
I think just whatever reason, man, those things have a nasty vibration to them. And for me over here, fishing a lagoon in the summertime isn't like it is right now, fishing it where we're kind of coming out of the winter where the water's nice and clean and stuff. Sometimes the water gets kind of dirty up there. And you know, it just, I don't know, man, it produces. It's awesome. Good bait.
Well, that day I was out there fishing with you, that's all I didn't use anything except, well, I did catch a couple of fish on a Miradine, but everything was on one of those cow paddle tails. It was, you know, root beer chartreuse tail. And, I mean, I love that thing. You know, I didn't change lures all day long. I think I maybe put a DOA shrimp on at the end or something, but that's all I used all day long was one of those paddle tails, and it was just fish, you know. And they're good because they're all purpose. You can rig them up several different ways. You can, you know, throw them. They cast well. You know, I don't know what else you would. You know, they're all purpose, man. That's all you need them for.
Yeah, I've thrown them at things like triple tail offshore. I've caught triple tail on them. I've caught mangrove snapper on them. I've caught small baby juvenile grouper on them. Flounder by the boatloads. I've caught, you know, ladyfish and jacks, and you just name it. You know, they'll all eat it because it imitates several different prey items, in my opinion, you know. The nice thing about them, too, is like when you're fishing redfish that are in real skinny, especially in the summertime when those fiddler crabs start showing up again, if you let the thing drop in nose first with the jig head on it, that little round paddle tail kind of hangs up out of the grass and kind of sways back and forth a little bit, nice and slow. And to me, that almost imitates a big male fiddler crab with his claw waving it back and forth, if you've ever seen them do that. So, you know, it's just funny. Sometimes you can just dead stick it and it still works.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, I can work a bait slow. You know, fishing a DOA shrimp is a very slow presentation, but I have a hard time just dead sticking something, man. Now, one thing I do like is that, you know, you gave me a couple of those exude crabs, man, and I think that those things would be, that's going to be a winner, man. I haven't had a chance to actually play around with it here, but, you know, on a weighted worm hook like that, that seems like, I mean, just the way that thing, you know, the claws wave and everything else, is that something that will move when you hold it, when you sit it still?
If you've got some water movement, yeah, it'll move quite a bit. I'll tell you what, man, a buddy of mine, Travis Tanner, who is a world-renowned red fisherman, right? The guy fished, one of his tournament partners is Blair Wiggins. And they've won pretty much everything there is to win in red fishing. He turned me on to those things a long time ago, and he was just like, you know, you really got to try this. And he had some Lunker sauce, crab scent Lunker sauce, and he put it in a little bag for me or whatever. And honestly, it smelled like death. Like, it was the nastiest smelling stuff you ever smelled in your entire life, and you didn't want to get it on you. He's like, trust me, dude, throw this out. If you find fish that are kind of finicky, throw it out in front of them. Just crank it. Don't jig it. Don't twitch it. Don't drop it. Just steady retrieve it right above the grass. And, dude, I promise you, if I didn't have paddle tails to throw, I'd be throwing those crabs. Because, again, for what they are, they have the most movement out of any soft plastic crab I've ever thrown. And, you know, several manufacturers have tried to knock them off, and there's other soft plastic crabs out there, like the gulp crab and a few others, and they don't have the movement. It's like a chunk of plastic just sliding through the water, and it doesn't look like nothing, you know?
Yeah.
Where the exude just happens to look more like a crab.
I mean, I really like the gulp crabs, the way that they look and everything, but when I use those things, it's just like pinfish bait, man. I'm sitting there getting picked apart by pinfish, you know, and I pull back a, you know, something that looks like a quarter, you know, with no legs. So yeah, definitely kind of, you know, I used those a lot last year, and it's, to me, they look great. You know, you throw them on a jig head or a you know, a weedless worm hook or something like that, but and, you know, they work fine if you can keep the pinfish off of them. So, I actually caught a sheep's head last year on one of those things, man, down a bridge piling. And it was, like, all shredded up. The pinfish had, like, you know, beaten the crap out of it. So I just said, heck with it, you know, and threw it down the bridge piling. And sure enough, a sheep's head ate it. That was, like, the only time I've ever caught a sheep's head off of an artificial. Normally those are like, you know, shrimp or, you know, fiddler crab or whatever.
Yeah, DC seems to be the queen of catching them on artificials.
Really? See, I can't ever get them to eat on artificial. Those things, like, you know, they got really good eyesight, and they'll spot you a mile away. But, no, that was the first time I ever managed to catch one of those. Aaron said he saw a lot of cobia at the docks on Saturday. They're around Canaveral.
Yeah.
Is that a common thing?
This time of year. Yeah, man, they're thick. You know what? I almost called you guys and see if you guys would be interested in skipping a kayak adventure and trying to chase some brown fish, but I don't know that I'd be able to get everybody on a boat. So it's been epic, man. I mean, like, some guys are going out and they're catching 15 or 20 fish a day and they're just culling through them, and other guys are going out and catching one or twos, you know?
Yeah.
It's a really, really exciting time of year to be a kayak fisherman or just even just a boat fisherman for that particular species. But the beauty of it, and this is something that I'm going to really touch on here in the next couple of weeks, so I'm going to try and get the kayak out there. The beauty of the cobia season is it draws everybody in on the beach. You know, you got guys in everything from John boats and flats boats and kayaks fishing for cobias to, like, 65-foot sport fishermen fishing for cobias. and that'll kind of give you an opening to run a little bit deeper offshore and go looking for dolphin and be all by yourself, so... That's really my fish, man. If I had a
You like the dolphin?
Yeah. Obviously, redfish is my thing on the inside, but if I had to pick a fish offshore that I'd love to chase, it's a dolphin, man. They're to me, if you were looking for the world's greatest game fish, they're probably the world's greatest game fish because they're plentiful, they fight hard, they taste delicious, they jump, you know, they're colorful, they're pretty to look at, they're aggressive. They're really stupid, so you know it that whole combination is like real. It's like the perfect game fish for anybody. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I know guys take their kids out and they catch boatloads of small ones or even a 20-pounder. You know, and then again, you know, I knew a girl last year who fishes out of Port Canaveral. She got a 52-pound bull dolphin on the other side of the Gulf Stream all by herself on a spinner rod.
Wow.
So you know, it's fun. It's good times. Yeah, Aaron, one of these days I'm going to try and get him out there on some of those cobias too, because we've been talking about that the last couple of times he's coming in the shop.
Yeah, those things will give you a beat down, man. I'm not kidding you. Pound for pound, you know, not only will they beat you, I mean, they'll wear you out on, you know, rod and reel, but, you know, when you get them in the boat too, those things are a handful. You almost have to knock them in the head with something or something, because those things will definitely put a beating on you when you're they just don't quit. So I was reading an article about dolphin, and I forget the exact number, but it was they were saying that they go from, you know, from small juvenile size, you know, whatever, 18 inches, 20 inches or something, to full grown. Like, they grow 3 feet in less than a year. Is that true?
Yeah, they're the fastest growing fish in the ocean, and typically dolphin only live about 3 or 4 years. One of the fastest growing fish and one of the fastest to die fish.
No kidding.
Not because of harvesting through commercial purposes or recreational purposes, because everything that's bigger than them that swims in the ocean eats them. So, you know, if you find yourself in a wad of little schooly dolphin offshore and there's yellowfin tuna underneath them, those poor little dolphin have no chance. Same thing goes with a marlin or even sharks and big wahoo. Even bigger dolphin will eat smaller dolphins. So, yeah, they don't last very long. They're sexually mature, I believe it's like 6 months. From the time that they're hatched to the time that they're sexually mature, I believe it's like 6 months of age. And then, you know, they grow like 3 foot a year. So they
wow.
stop growing like... A big one, like a really big dolphin, will be 70, 80, 90 pounds, and you rarely will you ever, ever, ever see a 90-pound fish. But every now and again, somebody will boat a 70-pounder, and that fish, they don't even look right. Like, their heads are huge, their body kind of stops growing at some point. They don't keep getting so long. You know, they just kind of stop and just get really wide. I actually lost one that was over 50 a couple of years ago fishing with a buddy of mine on his boat, and the head on that thing was just enormous. But, yeah, the cobias are definitely aggressive and very powerful, and as well as the dolphin.
Those Dorado now, they or dolphin or mahi, whatever you want to call them, because, you know, when you talk about, when you say dolphin, people think that you're catching flipper. But what do those things look like in the water, man? Because they're like every color in the rainbow, practically. You know, what do they look like in the water? Can you spot them?
If they're absolutely. If they're aggressive, if they're excited, their pec fins go from like a kind of a light blue or like a green color to a really dark royal blue. And their body just lights up. It's like, it's really hard to explain. I'm going to try and get some filming done of them this year because, I mean, they are so readily available off our coast. You know, you can come up to a board floating out in the middle of the ocean. There'll be 50 of them underneath it.
Yeah.
But they are by far the prettiest fish I've ever caught. And, you know, what's funny is a lot of guys that I fish with have never caught them before. When they hook their first one ever, and it takes to the air and does a backflip or tail walks or whatever, they tend to stop reeling because they're just like in awe of the color and just the pure beauty of the fish. And it's like the last thing you want your buddy to do is stop reeling. You got to keep that line tight anytime a fish jumps. And, you know, it's, I don't know, man. It's just, they're just incredible. They're absolutely incredible. And so there's times where it's calm enough on the ocean when you're trolling, say, a five-line spread or a six-line spread out behind the boat, and you can watch them come from, like, 40 or 50 yards away and just rocket across the surface doing, like, 35 miles an hour across the surface, blast the bait. And the only way you can pick them up, really, is by their color. I mean, you look off the back of your boat and you're looking at royal blue, what we call 2,000 flushes, you know, the stuff you put in your toilet.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh.
The ocean, when you get out there, like on the edge of the Gulf Stream and stuff, the ocean's that color blue. And you take something that's bright green and yellow and orange speckled and, you know, blue as well, and throw that out in the middle of this really dark blue, it just kind of stands out like a sore thumb. So, yeah, it's definitely a sight to behold, man. And I'll try and get you out there, too, this year at some point. I got, you know, a number of folks I know that want to go, and it's a great fish to catch. It's a obviously a delicious eating fish, a great table fare fish, and whether you call it dolphin or mahi or dorado, you know, they're just a great game fish, and I'm dying to get a bunch of them out of the kayak this year. So
yeah, I bet you that would be a blast. You know, I go through different phases with fish. You know, there for a while, bonefish was like my, I mean, I couldn't get away from thinking about bonefish and fishing for bonefish, you know, that was like my thing. And then, you know, I went through a tarpon phase and, with the kayak, you know, the tarpon on fly from the kayak, you know, that was like my goal. And I've hooked up and just haven't boated one yet. So that's my one of my goals out of a kayak. But I go through stages, man, where, you know, I can't stop thinking about or fishing for a certain species, you know, because, you know, you get, you know, like those redfish, man, you know how redfish are. They get in your head and stuff, and you can just, that's all you can think about is catching redfish, man. Same thing with snook. You know, I go through certain periods of time where all I can think about is snook, you know. I, like, see them in my sleep. And anytime I'm fishing at night and I see a shadow, it's a giant snook, and I go and I'm looking closer, and, oh, well, no, that's just a dock piling or something, you know what I mean? So I get obsessed with, just like everybody else does with it, man, and, you know, certain species. And I'm really looking forward to catching snook on the beach. That's like, you know, I've been thinking about that. That's like my latest obsession is the snook on the beach in the summertime, man. So, you know, definitely.
There's only a few fish that get my blood boiling. and really get me kind of really excited about fishing. And redfish and dolphin are really the only two that I just like. I don't know, man. I almost get like giddy and stupid over it, you know.
Yeah.
You know what? It's the whole like. Have you ever been trolling?
No, I'm not that much of an offshore guy. But go ahead. Tell me a story about it.
Listen, man. Like, you leave the dock, say 5 o'clock in the morning, 5:30, maybe 6 at the latest. So the whole objective is you're trying to get to the fishing grounds, call it 90 foot, 120 foot on out, by the time the sun just starts coming up, right? So when your lines go in, you just have the first bit of daylight. It's usually the best bite, usually the biggest fish come at that first bit of daylight.
Right.
Especially Wahoo love to chew that first little bit of daylight. Anyway, so you get out there, you got all these baits rigged that you rigged the night before. You haven't slept because you're so excited about, you know, the possibility of catching one of these things. And you put out your spread, you're trolling at like 7 knots, and you're just kind of cruising along. You're having fun talking to your buddies. Might be listening to some music, drinking some cold beverages. And then all of a sudden, one rod will just go off. And you don't know what it is until it breaks the surface, if it breaks the surface, right? And, I mean, you think like a bonefish runs, so you think it's harping, it'll pull some drag. You hook a 40-pound wahoo or a 40-pound dolphin and watch a 30-pound class outfit just absolutely get smoked and dump like 200 to 400 yards of line off your reel in one run. It's pretty impressive. And
yeah,
to have that happen to all 5 or 6 rods in your spread at the exact same time is just mind-blowing, because then you're like running around like a chicken with your head cut off. You don't really know what to do. You're like, oh, man, which rod do I go to? What do I do? But the beauty of it is you, if you fish with the right guys, it's almost like a team event. It's almost like a well-rehearsed football team or baseball team where, all right, your responsibility is that back right rod. Your responsibility is the port side rod and whatever, you know. And everyone
right.
has, you know, everyone has a job to do, and everyone knows exactly what they have to do. And if you work as a team, you can land sometimes 5 out of 5 or 4 out of 5. If you
wow.
run around like chicken with your head cut off, you can lose all but one. So, you know, it's just like, man, the adrenaline rush, it's intense, because it goes from absolutely nothing to wide open, and it might last a fight, like a good fight with the dolphin might last you 45 minutes, a big fish, right? Usually most of the smaller fish, 15, 20-pound fish, you can kind of whoop them pretty quick on 30-pound gear. And then here comes the gaff shot. You gotta sink the gaff in a decent spot where your gaff guy's not going to get beat up. The guy on the rod's not going to get beat up. You got to have the fish box open so everybody in the boat doesn't get beat up. And it's wild, man. It's a lot
yeah.
of fun. It's just, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, it sounds like it, man. You know, I mean, I'm sure you've been tarpon fishing, but, dude, you got to do it in your kayak. That's a riot, man. Because you figure, well, okay, I get behind that thing when he's running, and it's a sleigh ride, right? Nope. Because they always have other plans. You know, you always think, okay, he's gonna do this, and then, you know, you'll be getting towed around behind him or something. And then all of a sudden, he just turns sharp right and goes like behind you. And you're trying to like. You know, hold on to your rod. You're trying to put pressure on the fish. You're trying to, you know, when he does something like that, you're done. I mean, you're either going to lose the kayak or you're going to lose the fish.
My biggest fish out of the kayak is actually a tarpon.
Oh, really? How big?
Yeah, I can kind of give you a guesstimation. I know he was well over 100 pounds.
Wow, no kidding.
Yeah, right off of Cocoa Beach.
Wow, man,
so,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Did you get a picture?
No, I was all by myself, man, and paddled out, and we got it. I got on some bait, sabikied up a couple of big pogies, and threw one out behind the kayak. And I heard what sounded like a 5-gallon bucket hit the surface, and turn around and look, and my rod doubled over, and
I see this
old fish just tail walking away from me, and I'm like, oh boy,
yeah.
Wasn't really prepared for that, and
yeah.
it took me a while. He wanted to go east a couple times, and I had a few of them throughout the throughout the spring last year do the same thing and, you know, head east on me, and I just break them off, man, because I don't want to get towed 3, 4, 5 miles offshore. Not that I can't make the paddle back, but with the drift and everything else, it's kind of crazy.
Well, yeah, after fighting something like that for a little while, you know, you're not really in the best shape anyway to be paddling 3 miles back. At least, you know, that I wouldn't. I'd be, like, whooped. I'd be ready for a nap, and then I'd paddle back, you know.
Yeah, we get a lot of small juvenile fish in the river, in the intercoastal, up around the barge canal, an area up here. So, you know, we catch a lot of those on finger mullet, that kind of thing. And you're right, man. It's like that fish just doesn't know what the heck he wants to do. I don't think I've ever caught two tarpon that acted exactly the same ever in my entire life.
Yeah. No, they don't. You know, it's that's one thing that I don't know about you, but I just get, like, I get geeked up, and I'm just, like, I almost, like, it's not buck fever, but when I see tarpon and I know that I'm on or having a good chance to, you know, present to a fish, I just get, like, in awe. Like, I just want to watch them, you know, and it's, like, I can't, it's hard for me to disconnect that, you know, that it's like it's almost like watching TV or something, you know. You know how you get, like, stuck watching TV and you're not really, you know, you're either you're really into it or something, but you're almost like hypnotized. I get that, man. When I see tarpon, I'm just like, wow. You know, they don't call them the Silver Kings for nothing, man, because those things are, they're just majestic. You know,
yeah, it's a fish that hasn't changed at all over millions and millions and millions of years. You know, it's like,
yeah.
It's just, they're incredible, man. They are an awesome fish, for sure.
I mean, the first time I was ever, I mean, this is, like, going way back, but we spent, God, probably a couple of hours in the Keys, and we were throwing, you know, bombers and big, like, finger mullet, or big mullet-sized bombers, you know, on, like, heavy-duty gear. There was, like, this big, huge school of tarpon, probably. Well, I don't know. To me, it was a huge school. There was probably maybe 20, 30 fish there. But, you know, and you're casting, and it was like on every single cast, there was a fish following that thing all the way back to the boat. Not just, and obviously, you know, later on, I've you know, after I've talked to people about it and everything, those were pressured fish. And, you know, they weren't going to, you know, they followed that thing all every single cast, man, they'd follow it, right? And they'd be like, their mouth would be like 2 inches away from the back of it, you know, the whole way back to the boat. And you're just, you know, it was just amazing to me to see that, you know, for you know, like an hour and a half, every single cast, there's a tarpon following you back to the boat. But, you know, that was awesome. But I tell you, man, I get geeked up when I'm, I know a couple of spots where I know that I can find them on a regular basis in the summertime. And usually there's a school of greenbacks or, you know, threadfin shad around. And I just get, man, I'm just like all geeked up because you see them rolling and you see the school there. And it's just freaking, it's just awesome. All right, man.
We catch a lot of them on DOA Terrorize.
Yeah, I've been using those, man. I'm going to have to try that this year. And see what I can't do, because, you know me, I don't do the bait thing. You know, I'm a all artificial guy. So, but yeah, man, I got some. I'm hoping to get some of my some more tarpon flies made up for you. So you know, I got the Keys style and the Location X floaties, and those things, man, those are a lot of fun, to not only fun to tie but fun to fish with. So. All right, man, we're at the end of our hour, so I want to say tie lines to everybody, and everybody have a good weekend, man. I'm going fishing, so hopefully I'll have a good report, and, you know, for everybody, and hopefully I can get on the board for Kayak Wars, because during the 8 o'clock hour, Yak Sushi and Haywood were giving me a bunch of crap for still being a big old goose egg, a shutout on Kayak War. So hopefully that'll change soon. So, all right, man. You've been listening to Kayak Fishing Radio, the late show on the Kayak Fishing Radio Network. And check me out on badbatcast.com. And you can check out Chuck, too, Charles Levi, otherwise known as Redfish Chuck. And he's at chuckskayakadventures.com. Look him up. Book a trip. Go out fishing, man. And that's it for this week, man. I'll see you same time next week. Check out the blog. Check out yakangler.com. And see you next time, man. Take care.
Good night, guys.
See you, buddy.